Gareth Jones, thank you for joining us today. You are the CMO, the Chief Marketing Officer at Farfetch. I think you joined about a year ago, March 2020. Previously, you were the Chief Marketing Officer at eBay. With an interesting background, you've worked in about four or five sectors through your marketing career. T-Mobile, Capital One, Carphone Warehouse, and Compare the Market being just a few well-known businesses. But you joined Farfetch at the beginning of the pandemic and the lockdowns. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Rupert.
Not at all. And I was really interested in talking to you, not only because I think Farfetch has been a business that many have watched since it was founded back in 2007, but a huge amount has happened over the last couple of years. And I was really interested to know a little bit more about what a luxury, a boutique marketplace with your international scale over the last few years has looked and felt like over the last 12 months and the effect on the pandemic. So I'm going to jump into a few questions to try and bring to life your experience of the last 12 months. Before I do, when you look at the last year alone, so during the lockdown, during the last 12 months, the share price seems to have 5x'd in a year, which is quite something. And we'll talk about the employees and no doubt a fair bit of hiring that's gone on. But one thing that really strikes me about your business is just how international it is. Truly international. Yeah. London's a hub. I think Porto in Portugal is an important hub for Jose and the fashion world. But you've got offices in about 14 countries. And I think you ship to 190 countries. Is that correct?
Yeah, we do. Yes, we do.
Which is extraordinary. If you wanted to buy a pair of trainers today and you had a good year in earnings, you can buy a pair of Jordan Dior One Highs for £12,266. But if you had less cash in your pocket, there is a yellow T-shirt with palm trees on for £295 that I see on your site. So you've really cornered the boutique, high-end luxury fashion space. Tell us, Gareth, tell us a little bit more about your remit, first of all.
Yeah, well, shall I just give you a little bit of sense of my background and how I've got to where I am today? And I always get apprehensive and a little bit anxious and nervous about these podcasts and videos. And so I thought I would just listen to a couple that you've done recently. So I tuned into the one you did a couple of weeks ago with Christoph, which was fascinating. And you started off by introducing Christoph as somebody that had sort of danced across categories, which I thought was a really interesting observation. Now, I've definitely worked in a lot of categories. I'd like to think that I've sort of elegantly pirouetted across them, but I wonder whether it's more of a sort of ungainly stumble. But I've worked in retail extensively, financial services, comms. I've been around the block a few times, and I've always been sort of agnostic about the category that I've worked in. And the three things that have always I've been most focused on as I've thought about my next role were the sort of capability of the people that I would be working with. So working with peers who are sort of brilliant and visionary. The second thing has always been the ambition and the purpose of the business. And the third thing I've always wanted to understand is the culture. And I think if I think about those three things over the last 12 months, in some senses, they've all very much come good with Farfetch. And so, you know, the last 5 years I was at eBay, CMO for the UK there, I absolutely loved it because it's an amazing business that has such an important part in a culture and society. And we always thought of ourselves as very much the sort of barometer of what's in and what's out, the sort of a finger on the zeitgeist. And I can vividly remember these fascinating stats about, you know, when Peaky Blinders was on, I don't know if you're familiar with that BBC series, Rupert, you know, we would see searches for pocket watches and flat caps rise exponentially. You know, when Leicester won the Premier League in 2016, you could see through some of our data visualizations how interest in their merchandise not only dispersed across the UK outside of the hub of Leicester, but also we could see that velocity on their merchandise sales grow across the world. And so the thing that I was very much looking for my next opportunity, and you've alluded to this, was a global role. And so, you know, I've got that with Farfetch. And so maybe if I could just spend a couple of minutes just talking about what Farfetch is. So we are a We're multifaceted in the sense that we've got lots of aspects to the business now, but the core part of the group is still Farfetch.com. And we are a marketplace for luxury fashion that connects supply and demand. And we have global boutiques on the platform that provide a lot of the supply. And we work with brands in a very unique way, which is an e-concession model. And they also supply a lot of our assortment and our inventory. And through the combination of those, what we call curators, which is the boutique network, and the creators, which are the brands, we offer about 3,600 brands on the platform.
Gosh.
And I think at any one point in time, we've got over 3 billion worth of stock on Farfetch.com. And we've got a selection that is 10x the size of our nearest competitors. And so...
And just on this point, who is your audience? Who is your marketplace? Who are you selling to?
Yeah, so we're selling to customers, as you mentioned at the very top, in 190 countries. But I think the audience are individuals that are sort of naturally expressive, are individuals, and they can come to Farfetch. They can find literally almost anything that is in that luxury fashion space. And I think the other thing that definitely characterizes us is that we've got a younger demographic. So 70% of our base, and it's even higher in China, are millennials or Gen Z. And so, you know, there's a view that our GM in China has talked about often, which is the companies that own the luxury fashion youthful consumer demographic today will own the future tomorrow. And right. So there's definitely a younger, savvy, individually expressive customer that sort of gravitates to the Farfetch platform.
And so that's of course these are typically wealthy individuals.
Yes, but you know, you talked about the £290 t-shirts. We've also got, and you mentioned those £12,000 Dior trainers. We also sell a lot of off-white vulcanized trainers at £275. And so we've got a broad spectrum. Average order value, which I can share because this has been revealed in some of our earnings calls, is typically about $600. So we've got that marketplace platform. But then we bought a fashion incubation brand called NGG, New Guards Group, a couple of years ago. And then that gives us a portfolio of about 12, 13 street brands, including Off-White and Heron Preston and Palm Angels and others. And so that gives us 1P stock, as well as the 3P stock that we get through the boutiques and brands. And then we've also got a very, very fast growing bit of the business where we effectively offer all of our Farfetch end-to-end service capability to third parties. And so if you've been shopping on Harrods over lockdown, Rupert, that infrastructure is white labeled from Farfetch. And there's right. a number of other brands that sort of sit on that platform also. So the way that I sort of think about it is Netflix originally started by aggregating third party content, but then they moved into the original space and they started producing their own. Yeah. And Farfetch in many ways is no different to that. We've got that combination of 3P and 1P stock. And then another big, and we can probably talk about this as we go track through the discussion, we've got a very big burgeoning business in China also, which is one of the big important strategic regions for, you know, fashion growth, really.
And I wanted to talk about China, because as we talk about this subject of unlocking through the pandemic and the various countries that have unlocked in their different ways, businesses like Burberry, a FTSE 100 listed business that has equally done quite well through some of the early unlocking in China, has benefited from people celebrating, perhaps people being able to spend and invest with money earned on luxury products. Is that true to Farfetch as well? Have you seen exponential growth coming from China, or have there been other markets? And second question is, can you see how that's aligned with the unlocking of societies? Or were people buying equally locked down at home with less to do and a frustration of not being able to get out to a bricks and mortar shop?
So let me try and unpick that a little bit. So we've definitely seen a big acceleration in the growth of our business in China. And I think that's been driven by a couple of factors. There's unquestionably been a secular shift as a consequence of COVID to online. And that's not peculiar to luxury fashion. It's been prevalent across clearly many, many categories. And I think Bain synthesized this neatly when they talked about the digital blast. And so in many respects, those dynamics are not new. They've just been rapidly accelerated. So it's almost like we've had 2 or 3 years of what was a maybe more glacial increase in online penetration that has suddenly been brought forward and compressed into a 12-month timeline. And what's interesting about China is that a very significant proportion of luxury fashion growth and that compounded growth that we've seen over the last 5 to 7 years has been driven by Chinese consumers. But Chinese consumers, when they've been traveling the rest of the world, and so, you know, Chinese consumers, when they've walked through Selfridges or they've walked down Knightsbridge and shopped in Harrods and Harvey Nichols or Neiman Marcus in Hudson's Yard before that unfortunately closed down, or the Parisian department stores. And so I think 70% of the growth has been Chinese consumers on their global sojourns, as it were. Now, all of that demand is repatriated back into China.
Mm-hmm.
And the bricks and mortar retail infrastructure in China, you know, hasn't been able to soak up all that demand. And so a lot of that interest has migrated to online. And we were very fortunate in that, and we've been a very, very significant beneficiary of that. And so those migrations to online have been observed globally, but especially in China. And we had a very big announcement at the end of 2020, which is sort of a vote of confidence in our future, really, where Alibaba, who are one of the big trading behemoths over in China, made a very significant stake in us. And we're working with them on what we call the future of retail or luxury new retail. What does that experience look like in the future? And we're working on that today.
Fascinating, Gareth. Now, it's a global business, and I wish we had a bit more time to talk also about these other markets around the world in which you operate in. But I wanted to just talk a little bit more about a couple of things. But one is your year during the pandemic, your 12 months. I believe from previous conversations that you've had a very few days in an office. Is that right?
Yeah, so I walked into Farfetch on the 9th of March, Monday the 9th of March of 2020, into our Old Street office, and had a full working day in the office on the Monday, and then walked in again on the Tuesday morning, so the 10th of March, and I can vividly remember it, 11 o'clock, we all got rushed out of the office because there was a suspected COVID case. And I think everybody had a presumption that we would all meet again the following week once the office had been deep cleaned. And unfortunately, I've not been back since. So I've had maybe 10 working hours in our office, and the remaining 13 or the following 13 months, I've been sitting at my kitchen table. And so it's been an amazing roller coaster ride. Two things maybe, if I could just touch on, maybe what have we done work-wise to respond to what we've seen over those 12 months, and maybe a couple of reflections on my personal journey over those 12 months. So from a work perspective, and I sort of touched on this at the very beginning, we've got boutiques on the platform that curate their own unique edits and supply a lot of assortment. And many of those are small businesses effectively that are family owned, and clearly and they're global. And when the world went into shutdown and those stores were shuttered, you know, their footfall precipitously fell off a cliff. And for many of them, their only route to market and to sell that stock and to sell the stuff on their shelves and in their small backroom sort of storeroom was through Farfetch. And so we very, very quickly, in the first couple of weeks of my tenure, actually re-engineered the business so that that boutique experience was much more front and center. We lowered fees. We gave support and assistance on fulfillment. We pivoted all of our marketing to support those small boutiques. And almost exactly 12 months later, we launched a campaign actually last week globally again, which was sort of a bookend, which was supporting those boutiques through TV activity and outdoor. And so I do think that almost like the digital body language of brands, how they've behaved over the last 12 months, what they've done to support their communities, their constituencies of interest, helped people out, will be a big reflection over how they thrive in a post-lockdown world. Because I do think that consumers are more heightened and sensitive and empathetic to some of those brand behaviours. And we've definitely behaved in a very, very sort of principled and purpose-driven way. And that Support Boutiques activity was a perfect dramatisation of that.
And actually, I think that very much echoes the sentiment of a previous guest we had on, Alex Loizu, the chief exec and founder over at Prover, another marketplace that speaks very much with what you've spoken of, Gareth, here, about the community responsibility and the endeavours that everyone has played within marketplaces to support one another. And it should have tightened relations and in a way, rehumanised many of these relations by making it more immediate, the need to look after one another.
Yes, yeah. And what's I feel a little bit of a dilettante in luxury fashion, because don't get me wrong, I love spending money on clothes, but I've not got the sort of immersive legacy that many of my colleagues and peers have got of years and years of tenured experience in luxury fashion. But one of the things I have picked up on is that luxury fashion is a very, very delicate ecosystem. So small factories depend on small boutiques, and new nascent designers depend on the wholesale distribution through those boutiques. So small boutiques taking a sort of risk on a new designer. And so when those boutiques closed, the whole of that value chain and ecosystem was fractured and became much more fragile. And so I do think that Jose was very, very conscious of that. And that's the reason why the whole business re-engineered and re-pivoted around supporting some of those global small businesses, those family-run businesses.
Yeah. Gareth, I've got a couple more questions, and I'm going to try and keep these as dynamic as possible. But if you've grown as a business, I understand you have hired exponentially as well. Briefly, tell us, where have you gone to in terms of scale of headcount, and what have the ramifications been of headhunting, recruiting and onboarding people in a remote world?
So the business over the last 12 months has grown in terms of FTE. So I've got people that at the very beginning of last year went through a recruitment process that was virtual because the offices were closed, and so came into the business and have not visited an office or have not met anybody in their teams or in their sort of stakeholder network physically. And those people are now recruiting people in their team. And so if I reflect on my 13 months, it's been an amazing experience, but it's also been very, very difficult for me personally, because I've had 10 hours in the office over 13 months. And one of the things that I've, you know, being very candid, Rupert, I've sort of candidly felt is this idea of sort of lockdown loneliness. And so, you know, I've had innumerable Blue Jeans calls. I've met lots of people through Zoom, you know, but I feel that I've missed out on those physical connections. And so, you know, those sort of serendipitous bumps into people in corridors, the jibber jabber at the beginning of meetings, the social casual connections that I think build stories, and stories build culture. And, you know, Farfetch had an amazingly strong culture, but it's almost like a reservoir, and that reservoir of positivity and culture has sort of been drained a little bit over the last 12 months. And the dilemma and the question that we're pondering over as a leadership team is, how do you fill that up again when there's people that have spent 12 months in very, very difficult circumstances that have missed out on that physical dynamic interaction? And I also think that one of the things I've not been able to nurture is those work friendships that are so important in getting you through the tough times. You know, somebody that you can lean on in stressful moments, somebody that you can just call up and chat issues through. And, you know, so in a creative business like ours, problem solving is massively predicated on what I call intellectual friction, you know, and it's those difficult conversations are often easier when you've got strong friendships at work. And I think that's one of the things that we've missed out on over the last 12 months, especially new starters.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I think it's around the corner, I hope, and this, that the needle falling on a likely invitation for people to attend offices when they wish to, but sort of 2 to 3 days plus, but for companies to be open about the those who wish to and those that can spend a bit more time in an office or at home. Is all to be seen, but it's exciting, I think. And as you say, it's the classic water cooler moment that we never thought we would miss, but I think that we all do. Now, listen, my last question for you, Gareth, is this: here we are in early April. When we look ahead for Farfetch, what are you most excited by, either for the company or for your team, your remit? And did you mention the other day something about apprentices?
Yep. So first part of the question, I'm going to sort of plagiarize it with a little bit of dignity, a quote that Jose used a couple of weeks ago in a meeting. And he said, the thing that he is singularly most focused on today is how customers are going to shop luxury fashion in 5 years' time. Mm. And that's determining the things that we are focused on today. And I think one of the reasons why I joined Farfetch was that we've got a very, very bold vision, which is to be the destination for luxury fashion for the whole industry. And, you know, we are definitely starting that journey today. Just remind me of the second part of the question, Rupert.
The apprentice piece.
Oh, yes. And yes. And so one of the things that we're doing, which we've never done before, is we've introduced a graduate program, which we've recruited our first intake into brand and marketing, and those people will be starting in the next couple of months. And the other thing, which I'm very passionate about, is we've started an apprentice scheme. And so, you know, I feel very privileged in the sense of I did a 4-year degree. I had a very classical sort of upbringing, and many, many people are less fortunate than I. And so we've definitely conscious that we want to bring into fashion the type of person that may not have gone down that traditional route. And so give those people an opportunity that maybe finished school at 16 or maybe finished school at 18. Where we find those people is really, really important. And then we're also very mindful that we don't want to think of the prospect pool as just within metropolitan zones. We want to broaden our pipeline into those disadvantaged backgrounds, those people that are maybe less privileged than you and I. And so that's taking a lot of energy at the moment to sort of make sure we get that recruitment process and that program of education right first time.
How exciting. Well, Gareth, you must be looking forward to seeing the large and ever-growing team that you've hired or perhaps that you have never met and that you've inherited. But listen, thank you for spending some time today and sharing your experience the last year or so. And I wish you all the very best.
Thank you very much. Cheers, Rupert.